Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Achtung Millwall supports the Lions Food Hub. This is a friendly local food hub. It's based in Bermondsey. It's run by our very own Kelly Webster of the Millwall Lionesses, a very well-known Millwall fan. They do need supplies, dear listeners. Before we get into the show today, they have posted they need tinned meat, they need toiletries, they need soup, they need tinned fruit and veg. If you can help in any way, they are on Twitter at Lions Food Hub. DM them. You can DM me at Achtung Millwall and I'll pass on any help and information that we can. Lions Food Hub at Lions Food Hub. Thank you for listening. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Achtung Millwall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Hello, dear listeners. By public demand, you asked for it, you get it. You get an end-of-year season review show. You're going to get a double header because the idea of mixing a Zoom call with six of the personalities that feature on Achtung Millwall was just too much work for me, dear listeners. So you're going to get it as two episodes, end-of-season review. You asked for it, you get it. And today's edition features the new shoppers, Mr. Ryan Loftus. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Good afternoon, Nick. Good to be back on. And how are we all doing?
We are all right. There's a great thing. I might stick it online, actually. It was from Viz Magazine, one of their made-up letters to the editor, and someone had written in how he really didn't mind lockdown because he fucking hates people, and that means you haven't seen any. And I thought, I'm kind of like, I know it was made up leisure, but I'm not a million miles from, I think it was Mr. Terry Lean or something like that, his name. I thought that actually captures something of my approach to lockdown. I like that. I'm fine, mate. Thank you very much. Michael, how have you found lockdown? How's it been for you?
Quiet. Day-to-day work-wise, no different for me, but just obviously quiet the weekends because you look forward to the football.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not there. But silver lining on that cloud, the way the data is going, we'll be back next season. So as much as sometimes you hear some stupid thing in the stands by people who think they've failed recruitment officers for Millwall Football Club, I'm looking forward to hearing it again. So good to be back on as well, Nick.
Well, it's good to have you both on. I appreciate you both taking time out of your working days to fulfil the public's need for comment on what has been by far the strangest season of my life. I can't think of anything to really match up to it. Possibly the early 70s when we had power cuts, no floodlights and so on, but nothing really comes close to it. So I've set the chaps five, I don't know if they're questions, or five talking points, listeners. So first up, I've asked you all to sum up that season in a sentence. Who wants to go first? Ryan, can you sum up that season in a sentence?
Oh, it's hard. I think it's a very, very odd one. I think my sentence to sum up the season would be, yeah, fair enough. I think that's my attitude. I think with
fair enough
going on, I have to say it's, you know, I'm not too disappointed. I'm not too thrilled. But when you take everything into consideration, you just kind of shrug your shoulders and go, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, that's, I suppose. Right, I mean, a mid-table finish, obviously, it's a favourite cliche, but the league table tells the truth in the end, doesn't it? And I think we deservedly, what was it, 11th or 12th we finished in the end? So yeah, fair enough. Actually, that does capture something. So yeah, fair enough for Ryan, Michael. What was your season in a sentence? Did you come up with anything?
I might bullet point if you don't mind. Slightly.
Michael has come very, very prepared for this one, so he's we coming could be prepped. In for a while.
Wired. Go on, mate. Go for it.
I would say disappointing, considering the potential for promotion. And I don't mean just us, as I said at the very start of the season, considering there was no big teams up there. Millwall don't do mid-table boredom. Because a lot of other teams in our position would take 11th place, but we've been bored shitless, excuse my French. And thirdly, football is boring with piped-in noise. We need fans back.
Football is nothing without the fans, chaps. I don't know if you've heard that one before, but it does seem to have been proven to be true this season. I mean, my season in a sentence was so near yet so far, and I think it probably goes down the yeah, fair enough route of Ryan. Because I actually think that we could have done a lot better, should have done a lot better this season. And I mean, I've got a proposition to put to you both, actually. I'd be interested to hear what you both think. But I think that the squad, especially in the last month and a half or so, I'm really looking at last 2, 4, 6 games since the win at Stoke on the 5th of April. The squad has let Gary Rowett down in that period because, you know, you can get beaten by better quality sides, and we're probably facing some of the best sides in the division in the last 6 matches. But we have not brought that essential ingredient in any endeavour, sports endeavour of any kind. That's basic effort. I think we've looked switched off on too many occasions in the last 6 games, and I think they've let Gary Rowett down because we were in a position. I think maybe we would never seriously have challenged for the top 6, but we should have got a lot closer to it in the end than we did. Is that fair comment, boys? Who wants to weigh in on that? Is it fair? Is it harsh? What do you think?
I think, if you don't mind me jumping in first, Ryan, I think if you are a team, as I said, who finished 8th last season, and you say about the big names in the division or the bigger teams in the division, Nick, you had 3 poor teams go down from the Premier League at the start of the season, and good teams go up last season, is in Leeds, West Brom, etc. And the ones who went down from the Championship were replaced by, again, poorish teams from League One. So, yeah, I think that they've, to a degree, they've let Gary Rowett down. I think that this was a good, maybe not openly massively realistic, but I think this was certainly a season where we should have took a punt and gone for it, considering, you know, at the start of the season on paper, if you've got a good run, you've got a good start, you could arguably sort of stay in that top 6 for a lot of the season. There were some games where they did seem to switch off. I put in my notes about certain players. For example, we'll touch on it when we touch on the squad, but like a Tom Bradshaw, that there is a player there, but he didn't seem to really be hitting the heights or you know, getting the goals that his obvious talent at times delivered. And I think the only real player who consistently, every single game, put in a shift for Gary Rowett was the goalkeeper, who rightly won Player of the Season.
Well, I mean, I am, to some point, level, I'm parking the endless run of draws, and I'm parking the injuries, all of which were major factors in the season. So, you know, we have to be realistic. Some pretty key players have fallen by the wayside over the course of the 8 months or so, whatever the season lasts for. I'm actually focused on the fact that we've got ourselves to a level quite, you know, late in the season, early April, where with more effort, we could have got a lot closer to that top 6. I still think we probably would have fallen short in the end because we just set ourselves too much of a task by the last 6 games. But when I'm just looking at those last 6 games there, Ryan, I mean, starting with the hammering by Swansea, 3-0. We've got an okay draw away at Brentford, which was a tough gig, and we did well there. But we got stuffed. I mean, Brentford, Bournemouth pulled us apart, made us look like amateur hour. I still don't quite have words for Saturday's shambles, where we got beat 6-1. And, you know, we got beat at Watford, which I think is probably a fairer result because they're a decent side. But, you know, you look at those two hammerings by Swansea and Bournemouth, and then, let's be honest, by Coventry on Saturday, I find that unforgivable. Am I looking for too much here, do you think?
It's hard because I think in some respects it's not, you know, it's not unreasonable to demand effort from players, and it's not unreasonable to demand better performances than that. I thought the Swansea result was a very odd one. 3-0, I thought it didn't. By the end of the game, it didn't flatter them, but at the time, it really did, because it was 1-0, and we were unlucky not to be in the game. We were very unlucky when it went 2-0. That was very much against the run of play. And then by the time they get the third, we're just chasing the game and they just get us on the break. So the scoreline ends up looking worse than perhaps the performance was. The Bournemouth one was we just torn apart by a completely better side that we see that quite a lot with Millwall when we come up against really good passing sides. The players just look like they just look like school kids trying to chase shadows, really.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
And like you say, the Coventry one's a complete capitulation. It's really hard, I think, this season, and I disagree a bit with what Michael was saying, where the run, the injuries are really hard to park for me, because there's times this season when we've missed 6, 7, 8 first team players, not necessarily all starters, maybe 4 or 5 starters at times, but squad players and depth. And Millwall are, we know they have a really small budget for the league, we have a really small squad for the league, and we have generally low volume of quality for the league. So when we're missing some of our best players, and not even our best players, so you look at someone like Conor Mahoney, who hasn't hit the ground running, looks like he's talented in flashes, but never really consistently delivered in his first season. He's something completely different, though, to what we've got in the squad at the moment. And so having someone like that in the bench, or you can come in for a run of games and find some form, can change things around. You look at Ryan Leonard, who, you know, before his injury, he was almost nailed on for player of the season for me. And then it's easy to forget that. And then the last few games without Hutchinson kind of highlight his importance. So squad depth's a really big issue for Millwall. And that's not necessarily just a problem of building the squad. It is a bit of a problem with some of the players we've got. But the money that we have, we can't afford to have 30 players all in contention like some teams in the league who are happy to just waste their money, especially with COVID, where we're losing more money. So it's a really tough one. And I think by the end of the season, I think just caught up with the players. And that is a bit of a drop of effort. We have seen a lot of times with this side under Gary Rowett since he's come in, they're really inconsistent sometimes. They can go on a little run, but there'll be some games where we win 2-1, or we get a good 0-0 draw, like against Norwich, or like you say, against Brentford. And you go, right, we've turned a corner. We're going to put in a great shift now. And then next week we turn up against Rotherham and get beaten 3-0 because none of the players have bothered to run. And it's really frustrating, and it is becoming a bit of a trait of this Millwall side, you know, where Harris had his 2-0 lead phobia. Rowett's kind of having the flip-flop performance. So you don't really trust this Millwall side yet to build momentum and go on a run. And maybe that is not having fans in. Obviously Rowett hasn't had fans in a lot.
No.
But I think it did happen a little bit before that, but you know, he's not, you know, the majority of his career as a Millwall manager has been behind closed doors. So maybe with fans in the stands and a bit of momentum from them, that helps. But yeah, it's a really tough one this year. I think it's not wrong to be really disappointed with finishing 11th, but it's also not wrong to be kind of content with it and drawing a line under it. I think in order to be happy with the finish, it really depends on how we press on from now. You know, it can't be a regression. We have to now finish. Next season's a massive one for finishing above 11th. We have a trait of, you know, 3 or 4 seasons in the Championship where have one good season when we just come up, then we stutter a bit, and then we drop. And so, you know, next season, traditionally, you'd be going into the season thinking 17th might be a finish where we'll sit. So if we really want to be serious, we need to invest right and sign some good players and push for a top, I'd say top 9 finish. Anything below 9th next season will be really disappointing.
Yeah, I think for me, Brian, I, to touch on your point about the depth, I think I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, like you said, we've got a small squad or anything like that. You know, injuries hit us hard. But listeners, we'll touch on it shortly when Nick gets to the point. But Nick asked us to actually make a list of players and how they thought we did and everything like that. But when I was putting mine together, and I sort of half said it mockingly to the chaps before recording, we don't have any sort of steady, apart from Murray Wallace and arguably Shane Ferguson, we don't have that sort of steady Eddie, do we? So that if someone's out for a few games, we can put this person in, know they'll do a job. And then when that other person who's been out for a while gets back injured, he can obviously slot back in. I think with Millwall at the moment, it's like when Hutch or Cooper was out injured and Pearce came in, as much as he puts in effort, he's just clearly not at this level. So yeah, that obviously maybe put a bit of worry into the side, into the fans, into arguably even to Gary Rowett, even though he picked the squad. And same with the strikers up front. Matt Smith obviously wasn't picked for whatever reason, but he was scoring. But then when Matt Smith got injured, or I think he broke his foot, isn't he, or his ankle, or something like that, well, isn't it, yeah, towards the end? Who's going to, even if he's not picked, who at the moment have we got is going to replace a 10, 11 goal season striker? That's why you ended up with Jed Wallace and Mason Bennett up front. I think when you say when it comes to recruitment, the problem is I sort of horribly and probably unjustly aim this at sort of the younger sort of football manager generation who sees all these really big names or all these real flash talents and everything like that. But I think, like you say, Ryan, with depth, I think we just need to put three or four steady Eddies in there who are just reasonably happy to keep the bench warm and know that they'll get 10, 15 games a season, either from the bench or starting.
I mean, Shane Ferguson's been shown the door, rightly or wrongly, and Sean Williams' career has come to a finish, probably correctly in Sean's case, given his age and his desire for first-team football. But those kinds of players will be those two immediately spring to mind there, Michael. I mean, this kind of leads me on to the second point that I've asked everyone just to have a think about, and probably you too, dear listener, because it's easy to criticise, and it's the nature of football that we've all got views and opinions, and everyone thinks that they could do a better job than a manager. But in all honesty, I mean, Ryan, I mean, if putting yourself in Gary Rowett's shoes, are there things he could have done better or should have done better differently? Probably a better choice of words. I mean, I'm struck by the two focal points of the attack this season, which was originally going to be Troy Parrott, of course, back in the summertime months of last year. And then Kenneth Zohor, who came to us, I think it was midwinter, wasn't it, when he came in. Both turned out in their different ways to be approaching duds in their different ways. But on paper, both looked good signings. I was quite excited by Parrott when he first appeared. And I mean, I don't know that Gary Rowett could have done much different on that front. Is there anything that strikes you he could have done differently over the course of the season, given everything that's happened?
Yeah, so the first thing that I would have done differently, and it would have been top of my list from last season, which I think really, really hurt us this season, and if we don't sort it in the summer, will hurt us again next season, is signing a creative forward midfielder, so a number 10 or a number 8 who can push forward and create balls forward. I think last season, especially under Rowett, that was our massive, massive issue, was creating chances, and we just never created anything, especially in the middle of the pitch. Jed Wallace was right on the right-hand side, and when he drifted over to the left, and we had, you know, fullbacks getting forward, especially when we played the wingbacks. So we had good attack from the width. And, you know, and I know people, we don't have great strikers. Bradshaw and Bodvarsson aren't fantastic, but there is something to be said that if they're having two shots every three games, they're not going to get any goals. So you look at someone like Kieran Dewsbury-Hall, who went on loan to Luton, I think, from Leicester, who's really highly rated. And you look at him, who's, you know, making progressive runs, making progressive passes, you know, kind of driving from deeper in midfield or sometimes a bit further forward. You had someone like Izzy Brown, who was on loan at Luton again last year. I think he went to Sheffield Wednesday on loan this year, who's on loan from Chelsea. And they're players who can just, you know, get on the ball and move it forward. We don't have many people who run with the ball in midfield. I think Jason Malumbi did that quite well last year. He would, you know, get on the ball and drive forward for a bit. I think Ryan Leonard did that a bit. But not massive.
Lost him, didn't we? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily his forte. I think he's definitely more breaking the play up. So getting someone who can just break a line and then spring a pass, you know, how often do you see a Millwall striker played in behind the defence? I think hardly ever.
Yeah.
I think Jed Wallace a couple times this season, but it's really rare. So that would have been top of my list, would have been to sort that creative issue. Other than that, maybe not sticking with the 4-2-3-1 as long.
Well, I was going to ask about the tactics. I mean, have the tactics been correct for the squad that we have available, in your opinion, Ryan?
I think the five at the back works well. I think it worked well last season, and it gives us options to go with either the three up front with Jed out wide, or quite liked the two up front with Mason and Jed, and kind of playing a strikerless system like that. But with then you need midfielders who are going to run through, where if you've got Woods, Keith and Beldon, okay, Mitchell started doing it, but the other two aren't going to drive forward anyway. So it's quite back foot. But I think we played that 4-2-3-1 quite often, almost trying to shoehorn Troy Parrott in as a number 10, which he can't.
No.
And that was during, as you mentioned earlier, the big run of draws we had, where we just weren't really creating chances. And so maybe I wouldn't have stuck with that for long, but I can understand why Rowett one has changed. Millwall fans are always a bit unsure about playing a back five at home. I think we should be on the front foot a bit more, and that's fair enough. I think with the injuries, we were limited. We couldn't really play a 4-4-2 because we just didn't have a left winger in the squad. Mason Bennett can't play that far back because he can't really defend that well, or you risk injuring him, making him run too much. So it's a bit difficult that way tactically. I think other than, individual games where he might pick this person here, might pick that person there, I think Rowett did a pretty decent job this year in terms of, working with what he's got and the injuries he had at times. October sort of time, we had 9 attackers out. We had like 3 strikers in the squad. So I think he did as well as he could. I think main thing for me would be a little bit of that recruitment in the summer could have been a little bit smarter. But I think you live and learn from those.
Michael, I think I'm probably in general agreement with Ryan. I can't think of many things that Gary Rowett could have done better given the circumstances. Anything that strikes you that might have been done differently over the season? Or
I think it's a combination of what you both said, chaps. I think, and hindsight being a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
I do remember at the time, again, not in an arrogant way, thinking there's an awful, awful lot of expectation on Troy Parrott and no one's seen him yet. So I didn't really get overly caught up in that, but I can see why others did. But I just think there was too much expectation, which I think
I got caught up in that.
I know there's a YouTube
video, and it looked like the second coming of Lionel Messi crossed with Cristiano Ronaldo. I was totally sold on this YouTube video, but I think he was playing like an under 17s team or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, so did George Weah's brother from years back, for listeners who remember that.
I'm very easily swayed.
Yeah, I remember with the tactics as well. I agree, but one thing that I did find disappointing, and again, it makes it sound like I'm a huge fan of him as a player. I'm not overly, but I appreciate what he did for us. I think there were times when the likes of Matt Smith should have been brought on sooner in games or given a sniff, especially when we was chasing a game.
Yeah.
And you would see 86-minute subs, 87-minute subs. I think it was in the Forest game when we were losing ridiculously, or whenever it was. But there was certainly a game that sprung to mind where it was calling out for Matt Smith to come on, and he literally got a handful of minutes. So I think for a manager who, when he came in, I don't know about you guys, but there was a lot of people around me saying, just like substitution-wise compared to Neil Harris, he was a breath of fresh air. Tactically, he knows when to make changes. Tactically, he can read a game. Instead of waiting until the 67th minute when Harris would make a change, he would do it earlier or he would do it later. I think that went out the window for the second half of the season. But again, that could have been down to squad size, squad depth, and horses for courses, if you will. But I do think his substitutions let him down this season a lot.
Must be something in the water at Calmont Road, perhaps, that turns you into that kind of wayward substitution. You start with some insightful substitutions, then maybe you get very dull as you go along. Must be something. Mm. I'd look at the water. Check that water tank out at Calmont Road.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan, give me some reasons to be cheerful. I can think of my one was youth and the stability of the club. I mean, would they be the kinds of things that would strike you as reasons to be cheerful after the season?
I think there's, after the year we've had, I think there's plenty of reasons to be cheerful as a Millwall fan. I think the one that sits at the top of my list, and I have a little shrine to him just on my dining room table. My girlfriend's not that happy, but I've got my little John Berylson shrine. That's always
that is weird.
Cheerful every
You're not helping yourself here, right?
But that's always a reason to be cheerful for me. I think through the pandemic, where the club's been really stretched and really, you know, we've seen clubs struggling and doing badly. And owners who are somewhat suspect, you know, the likes of Derby and Sheffield Wednesday.
The convulsions of the football world. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. So I think that's one reason to be cheerful. I think looking how things, you know, may have been handled better through the club in terms of season tickets, refunds and bits like that. I know people had some gripes going on, but on the whole, I think they've been well managed. And the fact we have an owner who is so committed and so involved with the club and clearly cares as much as the fans do, considering he's someone from the US who, you know, wasn't really involved in football before, that's always a reason to be cheerful. I think definitely the youth side of things is something to be looking forward to. We often don't have that many players coming through at once, but to have two next year who look nailed on starters in McNamara and Billy Mitchell is very exciting for next year. Really, really shame that Billy Mitchell had his injury problems this year, because it could have been a bit of a breakout year for him. And I know it was good for him to get his first goal before the season ended. But it'll be great to see them two develop next year. And then you look at the likes of Isaac Lofe on loan and Mitchell down at Bromley.
We
rarely have, you know, we have a lot of young players who do go out on these loans, but we rarely have them doing really, really well. So Sutton, you know, on the verge of being promoted to League Two, they're going to have to tear up their 3G pitch. But, you know, that is exciting to have players out like that and to look beyond the squad day to day and see that there is a future. And I think this is something that the academy have been doing really well. And, you know, we saw like the under-18s doing well in the FA Cup and the under-18s and 23s both winning their leagues last year, or at least coming close before they were ended. That is always really positive. I think management-wise, we're in decent hands. I would like to see a bit of a backroom shift up. You look how well Davidson's done since going to
St Johnstone.
They're on the verge of winning both cups in Scotland, the League Cup and the whatever
Scottish Cup, the FA.
Yeah, the Scottish Cup over there.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic for them. You know, McNamara flourished under him, and I think Millwall have really missed having him in the dugout. I think it's clearly showing he's someone who's really switched on to go there and do a job with a really like a lower ranking side than St Johnstone in a relegation battle when he took over. I think that is someone we've really missed. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there. But I think there's plenty to be cheerful for Millwall fans. There's plenty to look forward to for next year. It just matters about getting some key decisions right in the summer.
Michael, reasons to be cheerful. Is it this new Luke range of polo shirts? Is that going to liven up your world at all, mate?
Well, unfortunately, you've beat me to the punch there, because I was going to say the new layout of the club shop online and stock.
I haven't looked.
Don't need shit. Apologies. I'll actually say, I think for me, again, you say about the youth and Berylson off the pitch, no, but I also, without trying to get too stoppy and sappy here, but I think it's things like the way the fans came together for the Lions Food Hub, the way they came together during, you know, with the community trust and helping, you know, feeding all those who weren't able to. And just the way off the field, like all the fans sort of chipped in and helped out, you know, with the local area and the club itself. So that's one of the things for me, or a major thing I'll take away, that I think, as you say, Ryan, a lot of clubs and a lot of owners showed their class or lack of class, i.e. we'll talk about the Super League as well. And a team like Millwall were very humble and stuck together. And that's one of the main things I can take away. I mean, compared to some of the performance on the pitch, that's all you can take away.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, you the traditional bedrock of Millwall has been youth players coming through. It's what we've always been all about. It's one of the pleasures of being a Millwall fan, to be honest, to watch young players coming into the team and, you know, and going on hopefully to bigger and better things. Financial stability is key. And I mean, he's been a real don't want to turn this into a John Berylson shrine like Ryan's got, but you know, it is we are very lucky in that way, and I think all, you know, everyone should be thankful for that. I'm going to pass. I've written my points out, listeners, in the wrong way around. I had reasons to be cheerful, followed by reasons to be disappointed. But fuck that. I've decided we've done all that already in the course of the analysis of the season, really. Squad. I thought it might be nice, chaps, just to touch on a bit of a school report for the main parts of the squad. I mean, and Michael, you've done some really nice comments. So I'm going to borrow your comments and feed off from there. Player of the season, you've given 10 out of 10 to Bart Bielkowski, describing him as nearly faultless and kept us in games and score lines low. I think it was, about 17 or 18 clean sheets he's kept this season? He's a major asset for our side, isn't he, Bart?
Yeah, he's fantastic. I think, yeah, again, 17, 18 clean sheets, matching what he did last year, kind of consistently up there at the top of the country. I think, you know, sometimes you look at the defence as a whole and go, you know, oh, it's not just the goalkeeper doing things, it's the whole defence as a unit who help defend. But we've seen at times this year, it looks like we've got some Sunday League defenders on the pitch and we've just got a fantastic Polish stopper mopping up for them. So, you know, barely a game but goes by without a Bart wonder save. So, yeah, it, very, very lucky to have him. To think it all nearly fell through over a dodgy knee
that's never shown itself since. 48 appearances, Michael, all season, and just one for the artist formerly known as Frank Fielding. I think that must have been a Caribou Cup game, I would think, Frank Fielding's one game of the season. Otherwise, it's 48 appearances and player of the season, a 10 out of 10. I think I'd mark him very high. I was going to go for an 8 or a 9 for Bart. I can't really think of, many reasons to mark him down from a 10, to be honest. The Polish national goalkeeper must be some player, Michael, mustn't he, to keep him out of the national team?
Oh, yeah, he must be, because I think you can literally count on one or two fingers the mistakes Bart's make. And I always think with goalkeepers as well, like, if yes, they make a mistake that might cost you a goal here or there. But I mean, John Terry said it about Petr Cech when he left Chelsea to go to Arsenal, didn't he? And he said that, you know, Cech will get, just him alone will get you 15, 20 points a season. Yeah. My goodness, how many points has Bart got us this year? Every single save, that every save he makes, they're either sort of very easy or he makes them look very easy. And I remember saying on the show a little while back with you, Nick, I think Millwall fans, Not in a negative way, don't get me wrong, because we are an appreciative bunch of talent, but I think we've taken for granted how good he is, because he's so consistently good and he so consistently pulls off these great saves. Like you said as well, Ryan, a game doesn't go by without him just absolutely clawing one out the top corner that he's got no right to save. So I think he's been excellent.
So is that one of those things that people put on their mugs in workplaces about how miracles are to order? And I can't remember how it goes now. You know, great things done to order, miracles take a little longer. It's one of those things with Bart Bielkowski. I'm just going to run down. I've got my squad arranging appearances. So top of the appearance charts was Bart Bielkowski. Then comes Jake Cooper with 45 appearances in this season. you've given him is it damned with faint praise here, Michael? You got solid no nonsense. Although the outstanding mood of Furore seems to have died down after his injury, I think Jake has looked a little bit in need of decent company in recent games in that central part of defence. He's been ploughing a lonely furrow in the last couple of games where we've been hammered. So. But I think he'd be a worthy asset. I mean, most clubs in our division would want to sign Jake Cooper, wouldn't he, boys?
Yeah, I love Jake Cooper. I think he's honestly coming up there with one of the best centre-backs we've ever had at Millwall. I think he's desperately in need of a rest. I think I really hope he gets a nice long summer holiday. I mean, there was the great stats about him was in almost 3 years without missing a minute. And that is fantastic, but in this season of all, we touched on it before about the schedule and everything, where you're playing twice a week and he's being asked to do a bit more, on the ball and covering a bit more space. So I know the injuries he had were shoulder injuries mainly, but, it's part of the game as a centre-back. He doesn't get bookings, doesn't really get cards or anything. So he just hopes a long summer holiday for big, tall Jake. And I reckon he'll come back as good as he's always been. I agree with Michael. It did die down a little bit towards the end of the season, a bit like the rest of the team. But he's an outstanding centre-back. And I think every season we hold on to him is a fantastic plus, because as long as we can keep him on a decent sort of contract, he'll make us a lot of money one day, I think.
Agree with that. I mean, Michael, I think he dislocated his shoulder twice. Is it twice this season he's done it and then had it put back in again? I mean, fuck that. I mean, I wouldn't fancy playing a game of football after that, would you?
I'd have a week off work.
I'd have a week off.
You don't need the shoulders.
Yeah. And every time I sneeze, I'd hold the shoulder and then leave for the day.
He puts his body on the line. 45 appearances, that is an incredible achievement for the season.
Yeah, I think you can... I think, not say I'm harsh, but I do think there was the talk of him going to Rangers for like £9 million, and will he go to the Premier League in the January window? I think it was the injury, because after that, as I say, my little sort of note to you guys, it did sort of die down a little bit. You didn't hear all the amazing Jake Cooper this, Jake Cooper that. But again, could that arguably also be because in the same bracket as Bart Biakowski, we now expect him to be this good? I think this season he showed his real maturity and how he can do more. Because I always thought with Jake there was a kind of level where he was only sort of as good, or he only had a lot of confidence instilled with him, depending on who he was playing alongside. So I always felt comfortable when he was alongside Hutch, but I didn't necessarily feel as comfortable when he was alongside Pierce or other centre halves in the past. But I think he's now got out of that sort of cocoon, if you will, and he's now doing his own thing. So
yeah, I really agree with that. I think that's a really good point. He obviously, we got him quite young, and that does happen with centre backs, where you have that one dominant one and one, who's kind of the secondary one who you never really trust as much when the other's not there. And I 100% agree with that, Michael, that he's now looking like the number one centre-back who can then be paired with someone else rather than, when he's not with Hutchinson, you worry about him a bit.
Well, Hutchinson's on the third on the list of appearances with 43. I mean, I think we've really missed Sean Hutchinson in recent weeks. Just going back to how uncomfortable Jake Cooper felt with Alex Pearce, can you imagine listeners watching it on your TV? I felt really uncomfortable myself, so I don't know how he was feeling on the pitch. Hutchinson and Cooper is one of those, it's like Gregory and Morrison. They're just a double act, aren't they? They go really well together. And I think that the benefit of the two has been really apparent in recent times. I think Jake has done his best, but, playing with Marlon as a central defender is not going to be a long-term solution, in my opinion. Or hopefully will speed to Sean Hutchinson's recovery. 43 appearances for the season. He's scored a couple of goals. All the goals is two goals for Sean Hutchinson. There's one goal for Jake Cooper, incidentally, boys, as well. We didn't mention that. Jed Wallace, also on 43, our top scorer, 11 goals for the season. I love Jed Wallace. I just think he brings that kind of... he's one of those players, and football, they're rare in the game, really, but they just lift your spirit when they get on the ball. I know he can be a little bit indulgent sometimes, but he's just one of those players you cross the road to watch. I mean... Michael, you've said he had an incredible season, Jed Wallace, this year.
Yeah, he. I've said it before, I've said it again, I've said it for years, he's genuinely one of the best, I'd say, right-wingers, right-sided players, attackers this club's had for, what, 20 years, 25 years? You will certainly put him in brackets of some of the best players of the new den. He wouldn't look out of place in that famous sort of playoff team of the early 2000s. You know, though he wouldn't look out of place in a squad of Tim Cahill's and Stephen Reid's in their primes and Neil Harris's in their primes. He is just an absolute class act. I think this year there have been moments where he might have looked a little bit off the boil or not on his game. But again, they are very, very few and far between. And I think that's more because we've said it for years, he is the player that if it doesn't tick for him, it doesn't tick for the side. So there's that unfortunate expectation with him that he has to every single week run through a brick wall to make things happen. He's the spark we've got. He's our best player. I think he came second in the player of the season this year.
Yeah, I voted for him. I voted for Jim.
I mean, it goes without saying that you've got a goalkeeper that has got who had one of the best clean sheet records in Europe, if not the best at one time. What you said earlier on, Ryan, 18, 19, 20 clean sheets across the season, and that's the only way he's going to stop you winning player of the season.
Yeah.
And I just think he's a top player. I know there's been talks and the infamous rumour mill about how many years he's got left on contracts and everything like that, but...
Well, Saturday could have been his last game in a Millwall shirt.
Yeah, I was surprised none of you have asked the key question of have we seen the last of Jed Wallace in a Millwall shirt? The elephant in the room.
Give him what he wants, so that theory can't happen. But I think for a Jed Wallace of that quality and arguably just getting into his real prime, you know, if you actually get the right sort of players around him, we would be foolish to let him go.
Yeah, I really love Jed Wallace. I think I agree with Michael. I said probably a couple months ago now when he was really hitting form kind of the later part of the season, saying, you know, what more does he have to do to be considered a Millwall great in terms of performance on the pitch? And you mentioned it earlier, a lot of people have said about his consistency. But, you know, although he can be hot and cold at times, you know, during games or throughout the season, I think for the last 4 years, he's carried this team. And not many players carry teams for 4 years and stick around. And I think what's been really interesting to see this year is how he's developed. I think Rowett, one of the things that Rowett has to be credited for, especially early on, I think we mentioned it, you know, the end of last season, he has developed some players quite well. And I think Jed is one of those who's really grown as a player. And that is just, you know, him maturing and getting more confident and more consistent. But, you know, like the finish he got against Bristol City, I feel Jed of a season ago, 2 seasons ago, would miss that. He's got options to his left where he could square it. But he took it so assuredly and so accomplished that it was never in doubt really once he hit it. And finishing was something he used to be weak at. He's making great runs in behind. He creates all of our chances. And that's really not an exaggeration. Losing him is something that the club should be worried about. I know it's not necessarily the best thing to write an article about, but he does have only a year left on the contract. So it's very much a sign a new deal in the summer and maybe with an agreement that we'll sell you for some money that in a year. And, you know, he really loves the club. I think he's a good Millwall player in the fact that he worked his way through the leagues. He's had rejections, you know, he's released from an academy. He worked his way up at Portsmouth, went out on loan in lower leagues, got his chance at Wolves, and then was pushed aside when they got the Chinese ownership and kind of had to re-prove himself again. And so he's a really Millwall sort of player. He gets the ethos, he gets the mentality. He spoke a number of times through the season about really missing the fans and really loving having the fans in there. And if we can pair someone with him, I think you saw the best of him, probably his best run for the club was, you know, when we had Ben Marshall the first time round. It just eased the burden on him. But Marshall was doing so well that Jed didn't have to worry as much. And then because of that, he started producing even more. And you could see how much fun he was having on the pitch. There's at times this season when you can see how frustrated he's getting and how wound up that he knows that if this game is going to turn around, I'm going to have to turn it around because he's thinking quicker than a lot of the players on the pitch. He's one step ahead of them. They're not doing what he needs them to do. So definitely if we can get another player in who can balance him out, it'd probably bring him on another level. If not, then we may have to think about, do we make money on him? Do we let him go for free at the end of this year and say, look, just give us your all and then thank you for your
shake hands, gentlemen.
You know, and you know what? If obviously Mill will need money and we do need to sell players, but if it came to that, you know, sometimes you just have to say, do you know what? Well, that's our bad and thank you very much. But no, another fantastic season for him. Top scorer again. Just getting better and better and long may it continue.
There's a great video quiz the club put out finishing from Jed Wallace, two from Jed Wallace, and then two. I'm just going to leap around my appearance league table slightly to include Scott Malone because there are two from Scott, two from Jed, all fantastic finishes. And you forget at the end of what's been a fairly tough season, but you forget some of the real quality finishes that both have displayed. Scott Malone, 38 appearances. For as substitute, 6 goals. I think he's our second highest scorer alongside Mason Bennett. Beautiful finish against, is that Gazaresque style finish that he did against? Was it Sheffield Wednesday, Ryan?
Yeah. Well, both of the goals in that video you're saying were against Wednesday. They were both in the same game. The first one, the first half, the pile driver, where he came inside a number 10 driving forward. And then the second one, the Gazaresque one. Scott Malone's fantastic. I think there's obviously the reports that we verbally agreed a sale with him, with Derby, you know, Derby selling everything in the kitchen sink. I think we should get him. We should get him relatively cheap. And I think he wants to stay out. I really like Scott Malone. He's a very good player. I really liked him the first time round, and he was well deserving of his step up to, you know, played in the Premier League for a little bit with Huddersfield and I think with Fulham the first time round.
Yeah.
But he's always been a goal threat. And I think having a player like that, especially when we have the wing backs in the back five, is really, really, really key to how we play and a massive threat. Like you say, 6 goals it's not small from a left back. You know, it's not. I highly doubt Murray Wallace has scored 6 in his career, but you know, having someone like Scott Malone, it just gives us a little bit of an extra threat. If we can get Mason Bennett firing ahead of him or get someone else through the middle, we've got a really good base to go from there, and let's hope he gets a contract and there next season.
Absolutely. I mean, he seems to like it at the Den as well, Michael. You've described him here as superb, and I think a lot of that is built on he seems to enjoy it at the Den. I mean, the world divides into two sets of people, doesn't it? Those that love the Den and those that don't. And he's one of those that seems to like Millwall Football Club and the Den and all that comes with it.
Yeah, I think when he left the first time, there was obviously a talent there. It was obviously a lot younger.
Wasn't he? Yeah,
but he went under a bit of a cloud, didn't he? Because of Holloway, we weren't really, and he went cheap as well, didn't he? I think he went for something like $100,000, which wasn't a lot for us in the sense that, you know, he was a real talent. I think since he's been away, he's matured a lot. And you stand there, Ryan, about players who we would need to sort of sign or keep or would help complement Jed. You mentioned him as well, but I was going to touch on him. I think if you have Malone and, as you say, Mason Bennett fit on that left-hand side to complement that right-hand side, I think we'll be a very, very dangerous attacking team because Mason Bennett seems to like it there as well. I was a little bit juries out with him signing on a permanent deal in the sense that, you know, he didn't have much game time. We know he came with a bit of baggage, but he's been excellent as well. And I sort of put my notes in, I superb, do what we can to sign Scott Malone. And I'll still stick by that. If you've got a player who is coming to an end of a contract, so you won't have to worry about transfer fees, and it really is just wages and signing on fees you need to worry about, and, you know, those little bonuses here and there. But for a left-back, wing-back to get 6 goals, you're right, that's incredible. That's absolutely an incredible stat for a defensive player. And the goals, the way he scores them as well, they're not sort of like tap-ins or come off his backside from 6 yards out of corners. They are good quality goals. He's very, very comfortable running on the ball. I think the way he runs with the ball, that's the type of midfielder you want to sign that you were touching on earlier on, Ryan. That sort of gets the ball and drives with it. Could Scott Malone play centre midfield? Probably not. But there's areas of his game which we don't have, and we'd be stupid to get rid of, because I don't think we'd be able to recruit that quality in the summer.
Quality is a good word. It's the word that you keep coming back to with Scott Malone. But I want to throw another two, name into the mix, two words, Ryan Woods. A much, much more divisive character. And I'm going around in circles with Ryan Woods, Ryan. How do you see him? Would you sign him? Would you keep him? His talents are clear and his flaws are clear, aren't they?
Yeah, I think much like you, kind of going round and round with Ryan Woods, I think he has been good. I think more so last season than this season. He's not been as good this year. I wouldn't sign him in the summer.
You wouldn't?
I just wouldn't have him. I do like him and I think he's a good player and I think he has done well, but something about him just doesn't, he's too inconsistent and he's not, he almost forces, or Rowett seems to want to play him in a way that just doesn't really work. When you're playing a back three and you have a midfielder like him screening in front of him, kind of tapping it about, he has played some wonderful passes and I know, Michael, in your notes, you said he has looked good when he's further forward, but I don't think he really can do that long term. He's not going for free from Stoke and he will almost definitely be one of the highest earners in the squad. And I really think we could get two players in for what we'd pay for him. Or maybe one and a half players in, a bit more money, and get better players, not necessarily better players in terms of quality and on the ball or whatever, but better players for the system we want to play and the style we want to play. I just think it will cost a fee, and if we get him on loan again and then agree to sign him on a free at the end, I mean, that again, it just draws it out, and you just know in the end it will just be a bit of a disappointment. By the time we sign him on a contract, he'll be pushing 30, and then it'll be a massive waste of money almost. But yeah, I'm not sure if Rowett has his heart set on signing him either. It's not seemed super clear. Normally they come out and, like Malone's been saying, he's really keen to stay on. We've verbally agreed one. It's been silent on Woods, really anything. So I'm not sure. Hopefully, there'll probably be other teams interested as well. But no, for me, it's a pass. It's a thank you for your service, Ryan.
Taxi for Mr. Woods.
Yeah, and Harry finally wins.
Harry can be the cab driver and kick him out halfway, make him walk the rest of the way.
I'm doing the second double header of this edition, listeners, tomorrow. I was going to speak into Harry, so I'm expecting that to be another point of conversation. I mean, Michael, you've put Ryan Woods down as indifferent. I think that's probably as a good choice of word. Would you keep him? Would you sign him? Would you retain him? Would you let him go?
It's such a tough one because it's that thing, isn't it? It's like the old saying, like, when he was good, he's very, very good. But when he's bad, he was horrid.
Yeah.
Because there are times, I believe it was the Bournemouth game, when he played Jed for a couple of times. And you're thinking, there's not many players, like, that he played ball proof to him. And you're like, there's not many people in the division, let alone our squad, who could play that pass. Mm. And I always go back to the argument of, because with Millwall, everyone has got this massive shopping list, as I said, the sort of Football Manager generation. We need so-and-so. Woods is a player that if he was available on a free or on a cheap, or he was let go and he was available, I believe he's the type of player fans would go, we should at least look at a player like that, or at least consider a player like that. I think the only way you can get consistency out of him is possibly take a gamble and offer a shorter deal, in the sense of, we will give you a one-year contract with a possibility of an extension if you produce X, Y, Z. I think you say there, Ryan, about how it's gone quiet with Woods. It has gone quiet with Woods, but you also say about the system that Ralph was playing with the three at the back and Woods in front. There were times when he was clearly building his team around Woods and clearly building and positioning players around Woods. So that's a difficult one to argue, not with you personally, but to argue to say that he didn't fit into a system, when you can arguably say the system was designed for him. But that's a testament to him actually performing in it or not. But I think with Woods, we said it, didn't we? We said that if you had a midfield of Woods, Mitchell, Kifton Beld, and you had that as a kind of rotation, that's a good little core set of players to choose from. So I would take a punt with him, but I would need I'd need something there that would mean he'd have to be consistent. I wouldn't give him a 3-year deal because then he'll just get lazy. It'd have to be a 1-year deal. And then, like I said, you prove yourself, we'll make it longer.
I'm going to run through because I see that time is ticking on, chaps. I'm just going to leap through some of the other names that are on the list here. Ben Thompson, I just mentioned Ben. I think Ben's at a real crossroads in his career. I mean, we all love Ben because he's one of our own and you know, he gives everything he's got to give. But I just wonder whether he's, for his career, he's probably going to need to think of a move. I mean, Ryan, would you see him as part of Gary Rowett's thinking next season, or would you, if you were in Ben's shoes, would you start to think about a move away? How would you play it?
No, I think he'll go in the summer. I wouldn't be surprised to see him go to Pompey. I know they've not got Jacket there anymore, but
he's much loved there, isn't he? Yeah.
Well, I imagine it'll be a move to League One, maybe on loan and then a permanent after that, or just permanent straight away. I'm not sure, but I don't think he has a place in the squad anymore. He's not. Unfortunately, I know some people maybe argue he hadn't had enough of a chance, but he's not good enough to be a top half championship player. He's just not consistent, and he's just not good. He's just not good enough. There's not something in particular about his game. He's just, his all round game isn't the level that Millwall should be aspiring to have it at. So he's not great at passing. He had a little bit of a flurry when he came back on loan, brought his form back from him in League One, but never really replicated that. His finishing's been really poor. He's missed 4 or 5 real big sitters in tight games this year. He falls over like he's running on ice. Maybe he's probably the most relieved person to see the pitch being dug up. But you know, I think it'll be a move with Billy Mitchell coming through as well, when the likes of George Evans and Keefton Beld now in the squad. And hopefully Leonard being fit, yeah. It gets a bit bloated around there.
It's hard to see a place for him in that group, really.
Yeah, and like you say, he'll want games. He's not young anymore. He's not a hot prospect anymore. He's going to want games, and he's going to not get them at all. So he's going to have to go for me, along with 3 or 4 others, I'd imagine, who we'll touch on later. But unfortunately, never. I really wanted it to work out with Thompson, but unfortunately, I don't think it quite has.
Michael, you've said similar, really, in your assessment. You compare him with the kid who comes last on Sports Day, but with tries and tries and tries.
Harsh.
It is harsh. We all desperately want him to do well. It's true. I think we all sentimentally want Ben to do well, but I think you're probably right there, Ryan. I think it's probably time to... I mean, from his own career point of view, I mean, the Millwall thing is incidental. He's got a few years left in the game professionally, and he's got to make the most of that. And a move would seem to be logical for him. Let's have a look at another player that has caused much mirth and ire, is John Daddy Bunvarsson. I mean, we still got him for another year, if you can believe this, boys. Since the departure of the lamented Skalak, he's got to be one of the worst signings, I think, that we've had in a long time in terms of just sheer lack of goals and, you know, inability to find the back of the net.
Yeah, he's been awful. I was looking back actually at some of that Neil Harris clear out summer of the year before last. That promised so much and has delivered, as in the Millwall way it would, so very little. Bodvarsson, yeah, he's been really poor. I know I said earlier about the chances creation, but he just doesn't do anything. Rowett likes him, I think, because he presses well when he can. He's very clever in terms of when he goes and when he doesn't. But beyond that, he really does very little. He's never looked good in a game. I think also as well, the fingers...
He doesn't look interested, does he? He doesn't even look interested, like he wants to be there.
Well, he doesn't look like he knows what he's doing a lot of the time. Like, he knows...
That's a fundamental thing, isn't it?
Well, I think for any footballer... I think it's requisite. And I think he suits Iceland's national team well because they're very much on the back foot. And you think, I can see Harris's thought process in signing him. My friend's a Reading fan, and he was quite sad to see him go. He said after his injury, he wasn't the same, but he said he was a good finisher, which I don't believe. but he's an odd one. I think, yeah, the fingers in the ear thing when he scored that one goal, was it against QPR maybe at home? when the fans
the famous cup tears incident.
It wasn't a great look when you score one in 50 games and you go, yeah, well, I proved you lot wrong. And he's a lovely bloke, but yeah, not for me. It'll be hard to move him on. It'll be really hard to move him on. But
that could be a subject for another show, Nick, in pre-season, if you ever run out of content. Players who are sort of like beloved at their previous club, but don't do it at the Den. Because no, in all seriousness, do you think about it? Scalak was exactly the same when he left Brighton.
It was international,
the outpouring from Brighton fans. Yeah, you know how good he was. Like, shame to see him go. And then you've got Bod Varson. So same as Marquez, when you know he would come back from his loan spells, they were saying how great he was. So there you go, that's the subject for a show in the future.
I think I might have squeezed the content sponge dry beyond it's a Kalahari desert levels last year, let alone this year. I was hoping for a bit of a summertime off, boys. But anyway, I want to praise Danny Mac, and I want to I don't know if I'm damning Marlon, but I think Marlon's place has been very much overtaken by the talent that is Danny McNamara. I can't see Marlon winning his place back as long as Danny McNamara is fit. I mean, how do you see the two? I mean, Marlon might even be one to move along. Ryan, would you see it that way?
Yeah, it's really hard. I like Marlon. I think I probably like Marlon more than most Millwall fans, which I think is fair enough. I think he's a bit divisive, and he does blow hot and cold. My dad is a Marlon denier. And every game we play, I get a text being, Marlon was shit again. It's a bit harsh. We lost 6-1. I don't think it was his fault.
That's a good word. There's going to be like the Handmaid's Tale. The Marlon deniers are all out there. Yeah.
But I was interested because I'd heard Danny Mac had done really well at St Johnstone, seen a bit of highlights, but I was interested to see what he was actually like. And he did well at Newport as well. Another one of my friends, a Newport fan. I have a friend in every club, listeners, but... And he was really a big fan of him until he got injured. But so I went on Y Scout and had a look at, you know, what they actually do in a game and how they actually play. Yeah. And what struck me was they were almost identical with obviously McNamara's playing in Scotland, not the Championship. But in terms of what they were doing, dribbles per 90, types of crosses, you know, passing and tackling, they were almost identical, which I think is really damning for Romeo, given that McNamara was playing, you know,
a lower level
full season, and he's three or four years younger than him, whereas Marlon's been in a Championship for 4 or 5 years now. You'd imagine he would have kicked on a lot further, which is a shame. I think last year he looked like he was. I think he stagnated a bit under Harris, and then as soon as Rowett came in and played him as the right wing back, I thought he was doing excellently, pairing up with Jed really well. Yeah. This year he's just struggled a bit. You know, who knows why, but it's a shame because I think Millwall will get less for him now than we would have done at the end of last season, which is a bit annoying. But I'm not sure if he'll move on because I don't think he'll want to settle for second choice right back. But, you know, Danny Mac looks like he's going to be the number one realistically. You've got James Brown, obviously, if he's going to come back up. You know, never really seen him much in a Millwall shirt other than the odd cup appearance. But if you're going to have a backup or that it could be him, I can't imagine Marlon will stick around for that. So even maybe young Hayden Muller, who can fill in at right back when he needs to, but it could be Marlon's last season. If we can get a bit of money for him, it won't be the worst. I think he's been a good Millwall servant, but maybe the right-sided centre-back thing will work out long-term, but I like you said earlier, Nick, I can't see it myself.
Didn't see the signs there. What about you, Michael? Do you see Marlon sticking around? I mean, I think it will be tough for him.
No, I think he'll go. I think he's been a good servant to the club. I'm not going to get sentimental and say he's like Sean Williams level or Steve Morrison, that kind of thing. But, you know, he's done well for us. I think I used to play defence even by my rubbish Sunday league level, and I've never really bought into these. You buy defenders or fullbacks and have them attack. So when I saw McNamara come into the club or start playing games, and he was able to not only press forward and join the attack, but get back and defend so superbly, I thought he was a breath of fresh air compared to Marlon, who's always been questionable defensively. And for a defender, that's worrying. I think with Marlon, you remember when he sort of first came to the club, or we first really had him with us for a period of time, he was challenging McLaughlin for that right-back position, wasn't he? When we first got promoted. And I think that might have been where Marlon's downfall was, is that he probably thrived with a bit of competition, in the sense that McLaughlin was obviously a good player. And he was, you know, I think it was only because of a red card or an injury that he was out the side and got Marlon back in. But he was obviously bringing down Marlon Romeo's neck. He leaves and goes on to Sunderland. We've not really got an established right back or full back to really challenge Marlon. So complacency, could you argue, settled in? And then now McNamara's come in. The competition's there. So when Marlon does come in, he does look slightly better. But unfortunately, he's now been overtaken for me.
That's football. That's the harsh reality of the cut and thrust of football. I'm just going to pick a few. I mean, obviously, Billy Mitchell, we've mentioned in passing. It's a big season ahead for Billy Mitch. I mean, he's really come in, made himself into a first-choice starter now, and I think rightly so, Ryan. I think next season's going to be perhaps the season we should have seen from Billy this year, but for the injury.
Yeah, really, really exciting. I think one of the good signs as well is... I think it was Jed who tweeted, I think after he got his goal, Billy Mitchell did his whole, you know, really glad to get my first goal, great 3 points for the lads tweet. And Jed, I think, quote tweeted it saying future Millwall captain and, you know, a bit like that.
Yeah, so I saw that. Yeah.
I think that shows, and, you know, I think you compare him, he's almost that, we've gone a few biblical references throughout, so he's probably the second coming of Ben Thompson in terms of... He's the Ben Thompson you've always wished Ben Thompson could be. I don't remember people saying things like that about Pomo. I know people said he was really good, people really rated him, and maybe the fans said a bit more. But to see some of the senior players talking about a youngster coming through like that, that's really, really exciting. I know you had his dad on the pod as well, and a little while ago, and everything he says, and they sound really grounded as a family and as a character. Billy does. He sounds really level-headed, and I think going through a bit of an injury struggle early on, you know, makes him stronger. He's, like you said, like his dad said, he's physically stronger now. It's shown him a bit of the hard work you have to do, that it's not going to be handed on a plate for you. There will be ups and downs. So I think next season will be, hopefully a really exciting one for him. And, you know, we might be watching a future Millwall captain.
Fingers crossed. I mean, Michael, Connor Mahoney, I want to touch on him with you. I don't know what to make of Connor Mahoney. I really want him to come good, but I just don't see the consistency. I mean, it's going to be an interesting... players like that, we can't afford luxuries that come into the game and kind of don't do much. And that's Connor Mahoney too often for me since his return from injury this season, but even going into injury before. How do you see him?
Yeah, he's never hit the ground running. And I vaguely remember Neil Harris saying in a press conference once, didn't he, when they were questioning his selections, I think it was just an awful game, when he picked out Conor Mahoney, and he said, you know, the season before when he was on loan at Birmingham, he had the best crossing stats in the league. So how you can go from being a Premier League player at Bournemouth when they were doing pretty well, out on loan to a Birmingham team, have the best successful crossing stats in the league. I know stats lie a lot of the time, but, you know, to have those kind of statistics in your favour and then it just fall from grace so badly is a worry. I think there's the joke with Conor Mahoney, he only ever really plays well against Luton. So if we can just sort of keep him injured but get him fit for those games, that'd be great. But it is frustrating because he has these moments, as you say, Nick, where he is absolute top quality, the way he pings a ball in or brings a ball down or beats a player and puts it in the top corner. But that is far, far few and far between for me. And I think unless something drastically changes in his form, then he's definitely one that would have to go for me and look somewhere else.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to close this piece, chaps, by just saying a thank you to Shane Ferguson, who's been announced will be leaving the club. One of those players, I think you've touched on it, Michael, with the, you know, the kind of the squad member that always is there, ready to step in when needed. A great cross of the ball, part and parcel of the side. I think about 5 or 6 years he's been with us now, Shane Ferguson. And by all accounts, from what I read on social media, a really nice bloke as well. It's been announced he's moving on. And just as we did with Sean Williams, I just think it's worth saying, well done. Thank you to Shane Ferguson, because he will have a special place in Mill history. If not one of the great names, he's certainly one of those players that you can look on kindly and fondly.
Yeah, like you say, I think you can't knock him for what he's done at the club. He was really good when he first came in, part of the side that got promoted. And then that character that Millwall fans absolutely love of, you know, being told you can leave.
You're finished.
Find a move and forcing his way back in and really actually being a vital role towards the end of that season. That speaks really highly. And I think anyone who brings him in will get a really good player. One of the problems with him, and it is a problem that players who are similar to him in that sense have throughout their careers, is that he doesn't really have a position. He's
a utility man.
The utility man often goes by the wayside when it comes to, you know, trying to push on and unless you're really good. You know, he can play left back, left wing back. Obviously, Rowett's put him in the middle a little bit. He's obviously a left-sided player, but the left-sided player maybe you have on the bench. So you go, oh, well, if the left back gets injured or if the left winger gets injured, we're playing a 4-4-2, he can come on. And if Millwall aren't playing with wingers, you know, if we're playing with just wing backs at the moment, I'm surprised he wasn't our second choice wing back throughout the season, but I'm surprised he didn't get a bit more game time at times when the squad was thin. But, you know, maybe he's just not at the level. So, yeah, definitely, thank you. I think Millwall fans will... He'll always be one of those favourites who, without achieving massive with the club, people will always like him. And So, wish him well for the future.
Yeah, Michael, I mean, I think, again, it's hard to disagree with Ryan's assessment there.
Yeah, he'd be one of those players that, you know, when you watch, when you watch these old programmes on Sky Sports when they show classic games and all those kind of things from like 10, 15 years ago, you'd probably watch them. Not necessarily forget him, but you'd sit there with a beer and go, Corey weren't a bad player for us. You know, like Corey could do a job. You know, one of those. Not instantly comes to mind as like a best or an all-time great, but yeah, agree. Certainly one of those players you could always rely on. I think for actual technical ability, I've said for years he's arguably or as a definite case to be one of the top three best actual technically gifted players in the squad. The way you'd cross a ball in, hit a dead ball. I can't think of anyone coming to mind who's technically as good. And yeah, I was surprised he would go because I think he's a very, very handy player to have around. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes. He might have said he wants more game time. He might have said he wants a 3-year contract somewhere else. And Gary Rowett just doesn't see that kind of investment for that kind of player. As you say, he's very in and out. But fair play to him. He's done well for us. He should get the usual round of applause when a game starts, but boos every time he touches the ball. But everyone gets that after they leave Millwall.
Absolutely. I'm just looking at these numbers. Shane Ferguson signed in 2015 on loan from Newcastle and then fully in 2016. 133 starts, 84 as a substitute. That goes back to, I think, what you were saying there, Ryan, that kind of lack of position. 84 appearances as a substitute and 12 goals in that 7-year career. So a big thank you to Shane Ferguson and a big thank you to Ryan Loftus and to Michael Avery for taking time out of their day, their busy day, to talk about the strange 2020-21 season. Thank you very much, chaps.
An absolute pleasure. I can't wait to hear what summer series you've got lined up, Nick. I'm expecting a pod or two a week, you know. I'm really, really looking forward to you following up what you did last summer, and I think all the listeners should be on tenterhooks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a look back over Mill's clickbait articles.
Transfer sagas that rocked the wall. A 12-part series brought to you by Axel.
I tried to lure Christian O'Connell in Australia on the show, but I don't think he even thought about it for a moment on Twitter. So anyway, we'll see what summertime brings. Big thank you to you both. I'm going to do a second edition of this show, this doubleheader end of season report tomorrow with Mike and Harry. But for the moment, thank you for listening, dear listeners. Support the Lions Food Hub at Lions Food Hub. And until tomorrow's edition, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. A river to Aston Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?